Hello, hello, and welcome to the NBA Outlet presented by OTGBasketball.com. I'm your host, Nick Fay. With me, as always, Corey Waldron. How are we doing, Corey?
Doing good. Sun's out, guns out.
Sun's out, guns out. Yes, it's a warm day in the Northeast right now. We got playoff basketball to talk about round two. Before we get started, if you do enjoy the show, you can subscribe to us on iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, Google Play as well. Check out OTG at OTGBasketball.com and give us a listen on Dash Radio. But let's get started. We'll talk Eastern Conference first. And maybe the most surprising win of the second round so far, the Celtics won game one, 117-101. Big time performance from three. What impressed you from the Celtics that on this one?
It's literally what we've been – I feel like I could play any of the last couple podcasts and I'm going to have like the same statement. It's literally just next man up mentality. I mean, I can't believe – I've been rooting – I'm not rooting against, but I keep saying, you know, Celtics are going to fall apart because of an injury, you know, and it's happened time and time again. And this team continues to not care who goes down. Like, they didn't have Jaylen Brown, and he may not even play in game two. And they just continue to play good basketball and win.
Yeah, it's incredible. Terry Rozier stepping up, dropping 29. Al Horford's been consistent at 26. And then Jason Tatum just doing his thing. I mean, 28 points for a rookie in game one of the second round is very impressive.
For sure. It's, you know, those three, they've been the big three. You know, they're not the big three we expected, but that is the big three of the Celtics currently in game, well, at least for game one it was. It's incredible. And all those guys are playing, you know, really off their ceiling. You know, Terry Rozier, so far at TD Garden this postseason has been phenomenal. The home crowd truly turns him up to another level.
Yeah, Rozier has been great. Also, three-point shooting was huge in this one. It's something we discussed a little bit on the last preview pod for this series. You know, Miami, against Miami, Philly had some really big games from three. They also had some cold games. In game one, they were 5 of 26 from three. Boston was hot, and they were 17 of 35. It's pretty hard to win a game when you're, you know, outdone from three like that.
For sure. And, I mean, on the flip – not the flip side, but, you know, the Celtics were just – they were getting good looks. The ball was really moving on defense. They really suffocated some of the guys on Philly. You know, obviously Philly had a lot of good looks, but the shooters didn't have a great time. They didn't get a ton of – you know, wide open looks. And defensively, to me, it was a really good effort.
Yeah. The Celtics did a great job in transition pushing the ball. Evan Dial pointed that out in his recap of game one. And he talks about how they pushed the tempo in transition, got them some open threes in the corner and whatnot, wide open threes as well. It kind of forced some mismatches where you saw Marco Bellinelli on Al Horford or Jason Tatum getting a favorable matchup. Another thing I liked, I felt like Miami wasn't capable of doing with their lack of talent, their lack of offensive talent. They attacked some of the weaker defenders on Philly. And that's not something we saw in the Miami series. Like Tatum went to work on Bellinelli. You know, JJ Redick got worked by Tatum a few times. So I think they did a good job attacking some of the lesser guys and attacking in transition because Philly likes to hover on the boards offensively a little bit, especially with Joel Embiid, Ersan Ilyasova, even Dario Saric.
Yeah, Bellinelli in particular, there were several times where you saw the Celtics just picking him out and destroying him. And that was definitely something that the Celtics did very well, I think. I think it was a good Brad Stevens strategy is, you know, especially when, you know, you don't know who's going to be your offensive spark plug for the night. You know, if you're putting your guys in a position to attack a weaker defender like Bellinelli, it may be, you know, the kickstart. And for game one, it certainly was.
Yeah. What did you think about Boston, you know, giving Embiid a lot of one-on-one coverage and kind of letting him get his?
The quietest 31-13 I've seen. It didn't even feel like he had a huge game. I saw him making shots and everything else. But, you know, it shows how little of an impact a guy can have when you close out on all the shooters around him.
Yeah, definitely. What do you expect in game two?
I mean, you know, I'm expecting Philly to come out and probably hit more jump shots. You know, they, even though the Celtics did a very good job on defending the 3-point line, there were still a lot of really good looks. Robert Covington in particular, he missed a lot of wide open looks. JJ Redick still had 20, but he missed a few looks he probably wished he had back. So I'm just expecting Philly to be hotter. You know, sometimes your jump shots just aren't falling. I kind of feel like for game one, that was a little bit of them just not being prepared.
Yeah, I think they were a little bit rusty in that, you know, game one. And like you said, they're going to hit more threes in game two as well. Boston's probably going to calm down a little bit from three. They had some guys who really got hot. I think Aaron Baines shot like 2 of 3 from three-point land. You know, a lot of these guys are not going to repeat these performances from three. Terry Rozier was 7 of 9. So I think they'll kind of cool off. It'll be interesting game two. Who you got?
Game two, I got Philly. I think this is going to go back to 1-1, and we're going to be heading into Philly talking about if the, you know, Celtics can make it out of five.
I agree. I don't know. I think the Celtics should be able to hopefully probably win one on the road, but I think Philly gets game two. You know, I think they're going to come out with a better mentality. Also, Boston was a little bit more physical in game one, and this will kind of wake Philly up, get them back into the groove, which we saw in the Miami series a little later on. But let's talk Cavs-Raptors. Game one last night, and it felt like the Raptors had finally got over that hump, and it looked like they were going to beat the Cavs. They had that five-point lead going to the fourth quarter. Next thing you know, it's an overtime, and the Cavs win game one.
Ridiculous. Like we said, the Raptors have a really tough time when they're matched up against LeBron James, and it just feels like he took them to school again. In a night where you have LeBron James struggling and, you know, you feel pretty confident because the role players for the Cavs haven't been that good all postseason to this point, and Kevin Love still didn't have a good night. He gets 7 points on the game. And then, you know, all of a sudden –
fourth too.
Yeah, and all of a sudden, you know, the game's close late. And anytime you have the best player on the planet, you don't want to have a close game. And the Cavs simply just manhandled that fourth quarter.
They won that fourth quarter. They also won overtime. And like you said, if you're the Raptors, you feel terrible about this, not only about blowing the lead, but LeBron is not going to score 26 points and shoot 12 of 30 probably again in the series. You know, he was very critical of himself after the game. The supporting cast was huge. I mean, you probably don't expect the supporting cast to step up, but, you know, J.R. Smith with 20, Korver with 19, Tristan Thompson with 14, Jeff Green with 16. You know, a lot of guys contributed, and that's not something we saw pretty much at all in the Pacers series.
No, and something to keep note of, too, is, you know, Tristan Thompson, second game since he's been, you know, given back minutes, and he had another double-double, and he's kind of been an X factor for the Cavs. He's been really aggressive. I think I don't know the stat, but I know I read it on ESPN, the bottom ticker. But he completely shut down Valanciunas in the final 5 minutes of that fourth quarter.
Yeah, fourth quarter was bad for Valanciunas. He missed a lot of layups that he was hitting in the previous quarter in the third, which he had the smaller matchup. Tristan Thompson came in there, was a physical presence. He made him work for every inch, and offensively on the boards, he just kills it. You know, he makes you box out every play. He also hit a couple little spin post move things. He gives LeBron a good screener and roller, something they really didn't have. Tristan Thompson's probably been an X factor for the Cavs the last two games.
No, for sure. And I think the biggest thing is he's playing with a lot of energy. And it's not like it's energy that goes away. He's had a consistent amount of energy so far. And obviously when you're not playing a lot, you're going to be fresher. And he really has fresh legs right now.
Yeah, it's like it's almost conserved energy because he hasn't played. He's well-rested. Everybody else is kind of gassed at this point of the season. Who knows? It could really benefit the Cavs. And we mentioned Valanciunas, who really dominated in this game a lot of the portion, but in the fourth he didn't. You know, 21 points, 21 rebounds. He attacked that, you know, small lineup that Cavs play sometimes. The Raptors really started this game attacking inside, and they kind of went away from that later in the game. And they also just missed a lot of layups. Like, I don't think I can note that enough. In the last, you know, 6 seconds when they had a chance to win it, they missed three layups.
Yeah, the ball was just bouncing around. And it feels like that's how close they always are to beating the Cavs, was like those bounces and misses. Like, that's where this Raptors team is. I think that, to me, that it symbolizes how this team plays up against LeBron. But it was – and that last shot, why is Fred VanVleet taking that last shot, the three?
Yeah, I think it was also a little bit of DeRozan, you know, not taking that shot too when he had the opportunity. So it's a combination of things. The Raptors are kind of out of it, and I think the mental aspect was a big part of the game. How much do you think that winning game one will give the Cavs a mental edge the rest of the series?
Because they also, and I know we've, you know, I don't really put much stock in regular season matchups. You know, the final two regular season matchups the Cavs have won. So this is three games in a row the Cavs have beaten the Raptors. So I think it does have some impact, especially in the fashion they've been done. I think one was like a 132-129 shootout. And then you had, obviously, this comeback in game one to then win in overtime. So I definitely think there is a slight edge in favor of the Cavs, especially just because LeBron James, like you mentioned, you know, he wasn't that good in game one. He's probably going to be really good in game two.
Yeah, and we almost have to think that Kevin Love may bounce back at some point in the series, hopefully. I mean, the fourth quarter, hit a few big shots. Mm-hmm. It'll be interesting. And I think George Hill has actually had some decent minutes. Not like he's doing anything crazy, but the fact that Cavs just need some type of guard out there that can ball handle, play make a little bit, be pesky to Lowry and DeRozan, he fills that role perfectly.
Now, I don't want to give Kevin Love an easy out or say it's something else, but do you think the torn ligament in his left hand is having any impact on his game?
I think it definitely does have an impact on his game, but I also think he's in his own head. If you watch him after every single play, he just seems like, I don't know, he just like sighs, like frustration, like, dude, you missed the layup. Like, you just got to deal with it. And next time, go up and dunk it or finish it harder. Like, he missed a lot of shots that he definitely should make. So I think it's just like a little bit of the injury. And then mentally, he's battling himself.
Yeah, I mean, there was one play that sticks out in particular. I think it was in the first half. He got an offensive rebound, and he was underneath the basket, and he did a little turn away into the paint, and he floated it up, and it clanked off the front of the rim. Like, he just had nothing behind it.
Yeah.
And Kevin Love never misses it. I can't remember the last time I saw him miss such an easy look.
Yeah, it's been a common theme in the playoffs for him, which is kind of sad. And I think the injury probably is hurting them. Maybe the Cavs are hoping for a short series, but that's wishful thinking on their part. On the Raptor side, what do you expect to see differently in game two?
I mean, I don't think Kyle Lowry was used enough. It felt only 12 shots. What?
Only 12 shots.
Yeah, especially in the first half. You know, what, he started 3 for 3 or whatever.
Yeah, 3 for 3, I think, what, 8 points, 4 assists, like right in the first quarter?
Right. And I felt like he had the hot hand. And the first half, I felt like he felt good all game. And then in the second half, the offense was going away from him instead of to him. And I don't know. I don't know if that was just how the game played out. But I feel like, personally, if I was Dwayne Casey, I would have been feeding my star with the hot hand. Not that Valanciunas obviously was, you know, 21 and 21, that goes without saying, and DeRozan had a solid 22, but I think Kyle Lowry should have been dealt more possessions for him to make a play.
Interesting. I mean, I think it definitely is a point to attack, especially with the guard playing, the lack of interior presence. Maybe Lowry just wasn't feeling as aggressive in the second half. I think if you're the Raptors, you're banking on your bench outperforming the Cavs bench, where they had some guys really – actually, more so, you're banking on your role players to be better than the Cavs role players who were bad last series. But I think that's a variable that it's really hard to gauge, because guys like J.R. Smith and Jeff Green, they're really wild cards from game to game. You know, JR is a guy that can light it up for 20 or 30 in a game and just get hot from three. Jeff Green always has been a guy that shows flashes, and you're like, why isn't he better? Kyle Korver, we know what he can do from three. So I think it's really the bench matchup is something I'm going to keep an eye on, and then the role players in general.
Yeah, I mean, I was thinking about this last night. You know, LeBron James always has that three-point shooter, or at least one of them. You know, he's had Shane Battier. He's had, obviously, Ray Allen, Mike Miller. And Kyle Korver now, those kind of guys are the perfect people to put around LeBron James. You know, Kyle Korver looks so young. You know, he's 37, and he looks really young playing alongside LeBron offensively.
He puts in a couple good defensive possessions once in a while, but that's like the end where I would really try to attack him on the Raptors. But one thing the Cavs love to do and LeBron loves to do is run that pick and roll or pick and pop with Kyle Korver. He'll get the switch, and if they commit two guys to LeBron, it's just an open three for Korver, and he doesn't really need much room at all.
Yeah, one of those guys who you need to literally suffocate.
Yeah, game two prediction.
Yeah, I think this is still going deep, so I'm going to go Raptors. I think they regain some composure in game two. Let me say this, though. If they lose game two, Nick, forget it. This Raptors team is doomed.
Yeah, they're donezo. If they lose game two, I think it's like done. And mentally for this team, having an amazing season like they had, being the deeper team, probably the more talented team, and still, you know, losing two at home, which would probably lead to maybe a sweep or losing in five, would really hurt them. So I think the Raptors have to win game two. You know, Lowry was saying like, oh, game one's our game seven for the Wizard series. Well, this is your freaking game seven right now. Because if you lose this, the team confidence is going to be donezo.
I'm really glad you made that reference. And actually, I love you for it, because that was literally what I was about to say. You know, this is their game seven. I understand you needed to win a game one in the first round, but who cares about the first round at this point? Like, this is really your game seven against LeBron at home. You know, you lose this game, Drake, you can't say anything to Kendrick Perkins for a long, long time, and you just got to go bury your head in the sand.
Dude, in mentioning that, Kendrick Perkins and Drake getting into it on the sideline, I think that's some extra hype obviously involved. And you saw LeBron and Drake smile at each other. I would assume Drake's probably going to fly to Cleveland for the other games too. So keep an eye on the Perkins and Drake beef.
Yeah, and Drake's one of those, you know, even in game one, Drake said to, you know, John Wall, they're going to have the brooms ready for him. You know, Drake is, you know, he's that sixth man off the floor to a degree. You know, as in football terms, the 11th man. He's chirping all game. He's another person like a Spike Lee now. He's the new Spike Lee.
Which can go really good or really bad.
We've seen it in the past. You don't see him talk to LeBron for a reason.
Exactly. He knows better. But moving over to the West, we'll talk Pels Warriors first. They had game two. Steph made his return. The Warriors picked up game two, 2-0 series lead. What are your thoughts on this in return of Chef Curry?
I don't know if Pelicans win a game. I don't know if they do. I don't know if you felt it, but the minute Steph Curry checked in, the energy completely changed. It felt like a completely different ball game. And I don't know. It was the most fun I've ever had watching Stephen Curry, to believe it or not.
It was incredible. Coming in, hitting that three-point shot right off the bat, boom. Like, you felt his presence, like you said. Like, he just has that type of presence on not only the team but the arena. Like, it just got so loud when he came in, and he's just obviously one of the best players in the game today, one of the most impactful players with his three-point ability. He dropped 28 points, 27 minutes, 8 of 15 from the field, 5 of 10 from three, and box score plus minus plus 26.
Insane. Absolutely insane.
MVP as advertised. Like, a lot of people hate on Curry all the time, saying, oh, he doesn't really matter. This Warriors team can win without him. But I think last night he really shut him up quickly.
I think too, and I'm going to be making a hot take in a few minutes here, but you know, Curry is, you can't ever downgrade or throw anything at the Warriors saying that, you know, Curry is not the biggest factor of this team. The Warriors are not the Warriors without Stephen Curry. And it was never more clear than last night.
And it's not only just a talent aspect, it's a mental aspect, you know, emotional aspect. And Drew Holiday put some good defense on him a couple plays, and he was unfazed. You know, he passed the ball, made a cut. Like, I think that's one thing he does so well. He reacts to different things. We see a lot of players just get flustered, and we don't really see that with Steph a ton.
Yeah, and for hot takes, sound the alarm. Kevin Durant is the better overall player, I believe, than Stephen Curry. But I believe Stephen Curry has a way bigger impact than Kevin Durant makes on this Warriors team. And I don't know if that's a hot take, but I really feel the impact is so much different despite Kevin Durant being, I think, the better player.
I think that's a fair take. I don't even think it's hot. And I might even say, if you're asking me which player I'd rather have, if I was starting a team tomorrow, I might say Steph Curry. Just because of that overall, like, culture he brings to the team. And I know it sounds crazy because KD is definitely the second best player in the NBA talent-wise, but Steph has something about him. And I think the fact that everybody in the NBA knows that, like, he's such a great shooter is that you can't give him an inch. It just magnifies his impact because it just, like, pulls everybody towards him.
When he hit that three and he stood there, you know, leaned forward, staring at it, you know, it to me, it felt like this series was over already. It was something I don't know. I can't even put it into words, but he is great for basketball.
I will give the Pelicans credit, though. I mean, they were in this game. They played hard, some good physical play. And one thing I know the Pelican fans were very upset with, Golden State, 22 of 27 from the free throw line. New Orleans, 7 of 9 from the free throw line. Do you think that is a home court advantage, or refs favoring them, or just, you know, part of the Warriors' defense being so swarming?
On this page, it says the answer is bullshit. It doesn't make any sense. How does Anthony Davis not get fouled, you know, at least four times in the game? Drew Holiday, he made it to the line, two times, I think? Or one time?
No times.
No times. That's right. He had no times at the free throw line. It's a shame. It was not a – I don't want to say it wasn't officiated – you know, fair, you know, it wasn't fair though. I mean, there's a lot of fouls that happen in basketball, whether they're ticky-tacky or not. You, in some way or another, you probably call a foul on every play to a degree. But, you know, to have it so lopsided in a playoff game, when, you know, you're not the team on, you know, you're the team on the road, it doesn't look good. And to me, it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, it definitely hurts. I think Anthony Davis, like, he was definitely fouled on a couple plays inside where he should have gotten free throws. I also think it's somewhat of the Warriors' defense in a way. And they did foul. They just did it not around the, you know, for shooting fouls, which I think helps them a little bit. But Anthony Davis, I think, always has to get to the line. Like, there's no way Draymond did not foul him once in that game.
I mean, the one that sticks out to me, obviously wasn't a shooting foul, but when Draymond pretty much pulled Anthony Davis down and then they rolled over and he like kind of was holding on to Davis's leg and then they called a foul on Davis. And it was like, what are you watching?
Yeah, I think that's important for Davis because I think it would have been I think it's fair to call a foul on both of them in that situation. But Davis has to be smart because Draymond's, that's his game. He wants to annoy Anthony Davis. If Anthony Davis gets attacked or he gets pissed, he's helping his team a lot more. If he just goes away and kind of similar to what Ben Simmons has been doing, it's been a really impressive thing from a rookie where a lot of players have tried to piss off Ben Simmons and he's done a pretty good job of just walking away. Where I think, you know, Anthony Davis, obviously in that situation, he can't walk away, but he needs to make sure he doesn't allow Draymond to frustrate him. Allow Rondo to do that and get in Draymond's face because that's more of his game and he's less of an impact to the team. And I think that's something I'm going to keep an eye on is Rondo versus Green.
I mean, they had a couple of really fun moments to watch.
They were really close face-to-face.
Especially in – that's another one of those situations we were talking off-pod about people you don't want to, like, you know, mess with or who would you mess with. You know, Rondo's not that big compared to Draymond. Like, he's got no fear. He's got some cojones.
Yeah, Rondo looks like he's kind of a sick dude. And I say that not in a mean way, but he just looks a little crazy. And I think he would admit that too. But Draymond definitely too. He wants to brawl with somebody. I think he would love it, but I don't think the Warriors would be happy if he got suspended or anything.
No, especially with, you know, what happened the last time he was suspended during a playoff run.
It didn't end too well, I don't think. But talking about the Pelican side, where can they adjust in this game and kind of give themselves a chance to make this a series?
I'm just going to say free throw line, right?
Yeah.
I think
you force the refs to make the calls in that game. And if you become physical and you attack the rim and you're going to make the ref, if they're not going to give you a defensive foul, you're going to make sure they call something. It's an offensive foul. Or, you know, this is Alvin Gentry in the first quarter of this game. Maybe you get teed up. Maybe Anthony Davis gets teed up or somebody, just to kind of let them know it's like, yo, no more of this BS. And I think this is a pretty common thing that people don't know a ton about, but I'm sure the Pelicans probably sent in some tape to the NBA offices saying like, all right, guys, like there's no way we didn't get this many, you know, we didn't shoot free throws.
Yeah.
So who do you think wins game three?
I just want to say too, you know, just, you know, some of the, you know, like the, if you add some free throws and it's a completely different game, because the Pelicans, honestly, you know, even though the energy felt different when Curry came in, like you mentioned, they were right there. And Davis and Holiday played really good games. I mean, no one on the Pelicans really, you know, had a poor game to how they've been playing. It was simply the, you know, free throw at the end of the day.
Yeah, and Clay had a pretty rough game on the other side, so it was kind of an opportunity to pounce on that. So we'll see what happens. But game three, who you got?
Game three, I have to go with – I picked the Pels in six, five if Curry came back. So I'm going to go with Pelicans game three. I think if they're going to win a game, it's got to be game three.
I agree. I think game three is the one. They have that momentum coming home, that energy. Who knows, maybe Steph's feeling a little rusty, but I think this is the one where the Pelicans need to like at least grab one and kind of give themselves a chance to push this series a little farther.
I agree. I think it's a sweep if they lose game three.
Yeah, I would agree with that. It'd be very tough to win game four, but you never know. They do have, you know, some really good players in Anthony Davis and Jrue Holiday. Moving on to the next series, Jazz and Rockets. They've only played in game one, and, you know, the Rockets came out and pretty much smoked them. The final score doesn't really say as much, but they had the lead in that game from the second quarter to, you know, I think I want to say maybe in the third or fourth, the Jazz got it within like 12. But other than that, it's just the Rockets own them.
Yeah. I don't know what to really say. I love the Jazz's defense, but sometimes you're just fighting a bigger foe to a degree. You know, the Jazz have one Infinity Stone. The Rockets have three. They're just too good, and I don't think the defense for the Jazz is enough to hold off this firepower, especially with how, you know, it looks like the Rockets are starting to come alive, you know, more and more.
Yeah, offensively, 3-point shooting wise, they
53.1% from three last game.
Yeah, and that's like something we really didn't see much of all in the first round series. So now that their offense is starting clicking, it's kind of funny that it's coming up against a superior defensive team. But I think, like you mentioned, the Jazz are such a great defense, but this defense they play is like the kryptonite is the Rockets offense. the way they space you out, they put Rudy Gobert in tough situations. Dennis Dow did a great piece with some video in there, kind of explaining how, you know, they put Gobert on PJ Tucker. PJ Tucker goes out into the corner. You know, Gobert wants to protect the paint, wide open three for PJ Tucker, or the fact that Gobert kind of sits back on screens a little bit, allows James Harden to kind of do his thing and ease into his offense, doesn't really create much pressure.
Yeah, and you know, anytime PJ Tucker, who, you know, he's not really a great shooter, you know, him contributing 15 points, you know, that's not a good sign. You don't want to see that if you're the Jazz. You don't want guys like PJ Tucker getting wide open looks and then knocking them down, especially.
Especially in game one, it builds up a lot of confidence. I think the fact that they take the Jazz away from having Gobert and Favors on the floor a lot together hurts them, because that's one of the advantages they usually have. We talked about on the preview pod, it was going to be tough to play those two guys. And at times it felt like Favors was having a little bit more success than Gobert. It's like these guys need to be aggressive. Some of it's on the guard play. Not having Ricky Rubio really hurts, because you think that Rubio's in there, he can get Favors and Gobert in better situations to score on some of the smaller defenders. But obviously he's not back, and I don't think he's going to be back for game two either.
No, it certainly doesn't look like it. And the one thing I can't say about the Rockets is they use a smaller rotation in game one. You know, only seven guys really played, and they had a couple guys, Nene and Anderson, who played four, then nine apiece. So I mean, that's something to keep an eye on, I think, too.
Yeah, definitely. The one good thing I'll say about that, they played less guys, but they didn't necessarily play, and no one played over 36 minutes, which I think is a plus. James Harden obviously dropping 41, like we mentioned, he really has worked the Jazz, and he has some type of confidence against them. Who needs to step up on the Jazz size in game two?
I think Mitchell's solid. I think honestly, it's got to be Gobert. Obviously. He only shot the ball four times, and it's hard for him to be truly efficient at times, because Clint Capella obviously has taken a huge leap in his game this year. But I think Gobert needs to be more assertive on offense. You know, he really needs to make his impact felt down low so they can really, you know, kick the ball out to shooters. I think for them, the battle in the paint is crucial. And I mean, Derek Favors, too, he only had 5 points. Those guys need to be working down low.
They need to have like 12 plus boards. They really need to dominate the paint on, you know, the offensive end in terms of scoring points in the paint, but on the rebounds, they really need to eat too. And I think that's something important, especially having Gobert. Maybe split their minutes up even more in this game. And like you mentioned, Donovan Mitchell, it's going to be tough, especially with Rubio not there. They're going to throw Trevor Ariza on him. They're going to throw all types of different looks his way. It's going to put a lot of pressure on the rookie to perform.
Yeah, I mean, he had 21 points, but, you know, 9 of 22 shooting isn't ideal, and 1 of 7 from 3. You know, and he was a team worst minus 15.
Four turnovers.
Obviously, whatever they're doing, it's working.
Yeah, it's and to the Rockets, you know, I mean, to the Jazz's defense, there's not really a ton they can do because offensively they don't have a ton of weapons, especially with Rubio not there to make life easier for Mitchell. Ingles is a guy that I think, like, he played a solid game, but they need him to play amazing.
Yeah, Ingles needs to take it to another level. And like I mentioned, Favors, you know, Favors can't have 5 points. They really need him to be more assertive too. You know, those two guys have to be in the paint. And then I think the one plus for the Jazz is Jay Crowder, you know, the last two or three games is really playing solid offensive basketball. He's actually finally hitting shots.
Yeah. But if I honestly was putting my money on it, I would bet that Jay Crowder's not going to shoot 8 of 13 in game two. So it's like, it was nice to have that performance, but it's almost wasted because they didn't even have a shot. What do you expect to see in the game tonight? You know, are the Rockets going to win? Jazz going to win? What's up?
I think the Rockets stay on this heat wave they're on. I'm sweating. They're making teams sweat on the court. I think the Rockets are going to run through them again tonight.
I think the Rockets are going to win. I think it'll be a closer game, but the Rockets will pull away in the second half. Something similar to what we saw against the Timberwolves. I don't think they'll dominate from the get-go like they did in game one.
I'm going to go on the record and say the Rockets win by 17.
Okay. I could see a double-digit win. I'm probably going to say more in that 10 to 15 range. We'll see what happens, though. That wraps it up for today. As always, thank you for listening. Thanks for hopping on, Corey. You can check out the NBA Outlet on iTunes, Block Talk Radio, OTGBasketball.com, and Google Play and Dash Radio.